If it please the court, my name is William Alexander, registration 9610. In this case, it requires a great historical review in order to get to the portion of the argument that we are making. Obviously, originally, back in the old days, benefits for permanent disability was capped at 26,292 and then 37,560. In 91, the legislature amended it to get amended the workers' compensation statute to do away with vocational rehabilitation. I'm sorry, that's not true. To do away with vocational impairment is what I meant to say, and to place instead a physical impairment as the guide for determining permanent partial disability benefits. When they did that, they also instituted a cap. And this was a cap like no other cap we've ever seen. In the old days, the cap was 26 or 37 on permanent disability. And a person could be on temporary disability forever before that, and he would still get the additional permanent partial disability. With the enactment of the new cap, now one considered both temporary disability and permanent disability added together to determine the cap. Now, if a person was seriously injured and took a long time to recover, then he could use up the cap, either 60 or 120 originally, before he ever reached maximum medical improvement. Now, of course, by this court, the decisions of this court, it has been held that you can't cut off benefits until maximum medical improvement because you don't know if the guy might be a PT as well. But the cap does include the temporary disability benefits. Now, if you have a person that has a very severe injury and needs three or four surgeries to reach maximum medical improvement, he can be on temporary disability benefits, like I said before, until the cap is used up. At that point in time, he has no further benefits and he gets no permanent disability benefits. In this case, Mr. Reed used most of the cap when he was on temporary disability benefits. He had a serious injury and he was on temporary for a long time. When he did finally reach MMI, there was only about $8,000 left before he reached the cap. In this case, we argue that the statute of limitations, you have 2 years to file a petition to reopen from the date the last payment is made, that's the only one we're talking about in this case. We argue that that is from the date that benefits would have been paid if there were no cap. The legislature in 1988 changed the law on reopening. Prior to 1988, it was due and payable, the date that benefits were last due and payable. With 88, they changed that to due or payable.
Have you looked at the legislative history to determine what that tells us about the reasons for this change?
There is no mention of what the reason is in the legislative history. Yes, I did research it, and they just didn't talk about it, or at least what I listened to, they didn't talk about it. But there has to be a reason. I would suggest to you it was because, and this is my speculation, I don't have legislative history to back me up, but I would suggest that the reason it was changed was because they were seeing more and more, remember at that time it was a 37,560 on permanent disability, they were seeing more and more cases that exceeded 37,560, and therefore they wanted to make clear that the cap didn't affect benefits paid. In other words, you still got 37,5. I'm sorry, you still got basically 2 years after the 5 years that it took to pay out this 37,560 before it went in, rather than simply 2 years from the date of the 37,560 being paid out. Turning to due and payable. For years and years, the language was due and payable in regard to reopening for medical benefits and in regard to reopening for wage loss benefits. The change to due or has to reflect that we now have an either or situation rather than that both benefits could have been paid. Due and payable is synonymous, like opposing counsel will argue. In this case, if benefits are due or payable, there has to be some reason for the two. Due, of course, means they're due now. There's no logical reason to withhold. Payable, I suggest to you, means that benefits that would be payable, and it could be down the road. For example, in this case, the benefits, the actual award of permanent partial disability benefits, but for the cap, would have been approximately $50,000. In the event that this case were reopened, and in the event that the claimant now exceeded the 25% cap, then, of course, those benefits are now due because you've gotten to the second cap. So payable and due cannot be confused. Due means actually owing. Payable means what could be paid down the road. And in this case, a very real example would be if I were able to reopen the case and exceed the 25% cap. That interpretation, of course, is in accordance with the only case that's really on point, the University of Denver case cited in the brief. In University of Denver, the same argument that respondents make here was made. They said, well, no, the date that last payment was made was the date that the claimant received his lump sum payment. Therefore, you only get 2 years after that. The court in that case said, no, you calculate the benefits as if they had been paid out over time, and then you get 2 years after the date when last benefits would have been paid. In this case, the last benefits would have been paid. November 6th of 2006, the petition to reopen was filed within 2 years of that date, and therefore we say that it was timely. One other thing would be if the cap did in fact make a new statute of limitations, then what we would have would be, well, first of all, there's no legislative explanation that that was what they were intending to do. And yes, I did the legislative history, and no, there's no mention of why as to which way they were going. But if you accept that it was because they wanted the date that they were payable through to be the starting of a statute of limitations, it would make a lot more sense. The more seriously injured person can use up a greater percentage of the cap as temporary disability benefits. So now, if due and payable are the same, then the more severely injured person is going to have the least amount of time to reopen. Whereas the less seriously injured person will have a longer period to reopen. Remember, reopening can't occur until after maximum medical improvement and after it's been closed. And here, when you only have $8,000 at the statutory maximum rate, you've only got about a year, maybe a little bit more, of time before the statute of limitations starts to run. So you use up as temporary because you're more injured, and then you get a shorter statute of limitations under respondent's interpretation. And that just doesn't make sense. It just can't be workable that way.
Let me be the famous last words, I suppose, but let me be sure I understand your argument. What you want us to do is take the $60,000 spread it at the maximum statutory rate from the date of MMI going forward, and that brings you within 2 years of your motion to reopen, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Taking the issue just as I framed it, why is that projection forward any different whether the statute said due and payable or due or payable?
Because due is what has to be paid right now. It's owed at this point in time. Payable is something that may be due down the road. Payable, me, as I set forth in the brief, and I used Black Law Dictionary, I could have used any dictionary that distinguished the meaning between due and payable or due or payable. Due and payable means that they are due right now and payable right now. Due or payable means they are due right now or they may be payable down the road.
All right, let's take that distinction as of the date of MMI. Wouldn't or payable mean cover only the approximately $8,000 left under the cap? In other words, as of the date of MMI, the employer didn't have to immediately pay what was left under the cap. That was payable.
Correct.
But why does that essentially extend, you know, a hypothetical $60,000 that's never going to get paid another 5 years down the road?
Well, actually, though, if the claimant got worse, in this case, the claimant had additional surgery, which was paid for by the city. If I had been able to file the petition to reopen at that point in time and litigate that, I mean, again, we didn't get this far, but I would suggest to you that the impairment rating because of the additional surgery would now be over 25%. Now, the claimant didn't lose those $50,000 of benefits. They just didn't have to pay them. But once I get over that 25%, now they are due, and it's like I say, it's just, you know, you don't lose those benefits. They're still payable down the road once I get over the 25% cap.
But your argument would extend the statute of limitations in all cases, whether or not the claimant was successful in showing a deteriorated physical condition that put him over the 25% cap.
Well, but I'm not extending it. You'd have to bring it within 2 years of the date that the last payment would have been paid. In this case, if there was no cap, the last payment would have been made on November 6, 2006, so I would have until November 6 of 2008. So, I mean, I'm not extending it indefinitely for everybody. I'm just extending it the 2 years beyond which he should have received benefits.
Thank you.
I would like to reserve the remaining.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Kruger, the attorney for the City of Colorado Springs in this workers' compensation proceeding. I'll be presenting the argument. At council table with me is Assistant Attorney General Lee Hegner. He is available to answer any questions the panel may have to direct towards the ICAO in this case. Here, whether or not benefits are due or payable, there has to actually be a obligation or a benefit due or payable. Here, what 842.107.5 specifically does, and the Supreme Court discussed it in Dillard, is that it limits. His client is not entitled to anything more than $60,000. There is no obligation. There's nothing there. There's nothing due or payable, regardless of how we describe those terms, whether it's due or payable or due and payable. There is no obligation. Once the cap has been exhausted, and that's what we have here in this case. Claimant reached MMI and had received $51,000 approximately of temporary total disability benefits. The PPD award, the permanent partial disability award, approximately it's 21%, I believe. They paid that all out by August, first week in August 2005. That was complete, or 2004, excuse me, that was paid. Their obligation under the statute, under the act, was completely fulfilled at that point. They had paid $60,000. There could not be anything more due or payable, due and payable, under the act. The statute precluded it. So consequently, our discussion on that, with all due respect to opposing counsel, lovely, terrific historical context, it's a bit of a red herring because those benefits were not at issue. Now, the claimant at the time felt he was entitled to more. So the claimant proceeded to hearing. So this isn't a case where somehow the claimant was deprived of the opportunity to attempt to get above the cap. He did attempt that. He went to hearing. The administrative law judge determined that respondents were liable for the amount of indemnity benefits that they had admitted in their final admission of liability, up to the $60,000. That was it. There was no more due and payable at that time. Consequently, the statute of limitations began to run for those 2 years beginning when the final admission of liability was filed, because at that particular point, the benefits that respondents were liable for, that which was due to the claimant, what was due was the amount up to $60,000. When was it payable? It was payable, it's reflected in the final admission, up through August 4th, 2004, and the administrative law judge determined that was correct in this case. The claimant did not demonstrate he was entitled to more.
Now, there were more benefits paid after the FAL, or are you saying that as of the FAL, they'd already paid up to 60?
They'd already paid up to 60. I believe by August 4th of 2005, they had paid out the amount that they were going to owe the claimant under the final admission. It's just that the following week, they filed the final admission to reflect that.
Okay. So there's no monetary obligation as of the date of the FAL unless the claimant proceeded at hearing in establishing a greater level of disability.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So at that particular point, under the plain language, and again, the historical context is nice, but for purposes of statutory interpretation, we only need to inquire into legislative history and legislative intent if the intent isn't clear from the plain language of the two statutes. And here, the two statutes at issue, 843-303-2a, is clear. You can petition to reopen within 2 years of the last benefit due or payable. Now, we can debate what the or means, but regardless of the answer to that debate, the second statute at issue, 842-107.5, can be interpreted entirely harmoniously with 303-2a, in so much as that statute plainly and clearly limits the receipt of benefits for an injured worker of an impairment rating of 25% or less to $60,000. That's all he can receive. Consequently, there's no reason to look further than the plain language of those two statutes, and specifically 842-107.5. And opposing counsel has argued in such a way that he turns 842-107.5, he says, into a new statute of limitations. Well, in fact, if opposing counsel's argument is accepted, the statute of limitations found in 843-303-2A would be extended far longer. This is a perfect example of that. It would have been extended an additional 2 years based upon benefits that the claimant was not entitled to and respondents were not liable for. That would be entirely inconsistent with the statute of limitations itself for the petition to reopen and the limit on benefits. In this particular case, I respectfully suggest that this court looks simply at the plain language of the statute. It's fairly clear the claimant was only entitled to $60,000. That amount was, regardless of your definition of due or payable, respondents took care of that obligation in August of 2004. The claimant had the opportunity to increase that. The ALJ in January 2005 denied it and affirmed the respondent's final admission of liability, which is filed in August of 2004. Consequently, the limitations period ran. Both the administrative law judge and the Industrial Claim Appeals Office correctly interpreted these two statutes and denied the claimant's request and dismissed the petition. If the panel has any additional questions, thank you.
Two questions, if I could. Beg your pardon?
Two questions. Do you agree with opposing counsel's statement that as of August 04, the FAL, no additional monies were owed to your client, based on the facts as known at that time?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. They would have owed still the $8,000.
All right, let's move forward then to the hearing as of January 05. At that time, based on the facts as determined by the ALJ, did the employer owe your client any more money?
Oh, at that point in time, no.
Can you think of any other circumstance in which an event that occurs in the future, I mean, changes the application of the statute of limitations?
Well, I don't believe that the legislature attempted to create a new statute of limitations. As I pointed out, in the old days, it was always 5 years from the date of maximum medical improvement on a max award. It could be less than that, but on 26 or 37, it was about 5 years. And then, of course, you had 2 years after that. You always had, on a max case, you always had 7 years in which to file a petition to reopen. With the interpretation of the statute as a new statute of limitations, I just don't believe the legislature ever even considered that they were making the more serious case have a shorter period to reopen than the less serious case. The reason I say that is because on the more serious case, you're going to have more temporary total. Now you're using up your cap. You don't get an automatic 7 years when you reach permanent partial. You only get a few weeks in this case. More than a few weeks, but not very much more. And they just did not intend to make the more serious cases unreopenable, if that is such a word, and the less serious cases to have a longer time to reopen. That's just not what they intended to do.
Thank you. We appreciate the